If I understood Captain Vassilos correctly, you believe there were more ships in the system, observe in your battle with the raider. If that is so, can you explain why it bothered you? I may as well mention that none of our scan technicians found a trace of such a ship, even when they went back over the recorded scans.
Sir, let me take the last point first. Your scan techs are working with civilian-level scans, and old ones at that. We happen to have more up-to-date scans on the yacht, which means that we can see farther and detect smaller disturbances.
Oh, you have military-grade equipment.
I prefer not to specify the equipment we have. Not to impugn the integrity of anyone in this room, but it may be that our ability to detect trouble at a range where trouble believes itself undetectable will save lives.
I see. And you believe there were other ships in the system observing? How many ships?
We detected one.
The General Secretary nodded. He had caught the implication.
It may, of course, have been an innocent vessel with a very cautious captain, but its arrival, its response to the battle, and its departure suggest something else. My scan tech has been working on the data we got. There is some indication that the ship has a history of traversing systems just as raids are going on. A paymaster, perhaps.
But who would be doing that? Even when they destroyed our orbital station, they got little for it. We couldn't figure out then what they really wanted.
To see if the fleet would come to clean house, I suspect. When you got so little response from fleet, they came back, as much to test that hypothesis as anything else.
But why? We have no great wealth. We're not on the direct route to anywhere else, as I'm sure you noticed.
To be honest, I have not yet had time for a serious consideration of what may lie behind what we saw. But I am sure that another ship observed our handling of the raider, and that it was there precisely to observe your defensive capability. That suggests some plan for an attack. From whom or why, I cannot say at this point.
She suspected, but she did not want to commit herself yet.
What should we do?
Send an urgent message to Fleet, of course. I'm sure you're aware that things are unsettled in places. They have other problems. Still, we can draft a report that should elicit some response. Even sending such a report may help out. I would expect those watching your situation to know of such a request. They would probably delay any action until they ascertained whether Fleet responded in force.
Or they would attack all the faster if they were nearly ready. Harris wished she had more knowledge and less intuitive sense of time ticking away.
You were not sent here as a sort of representative of Fleet?
No. I am not now in the regular space service. I'm a civilian, hired by Lady Cecilia to take her where she wishes. In this case, here, to look for bloodstock.
I thought it was her yacht.
It was, but through a legal tangle when she was in a coma last year, it became mine. She will probably tell you the whole thing if you ask her.
Harris didn't want to. She realized that someone who wanted to see her arrival with the sweet delight as more than providential could find other reasons for the change of ownership.
As long as you're here, could we beg your assistance, your advice? I quite understand that you're not, as you say now, in Fleet, but you have more experience in these matters than anyone else here. If you could suggest how we should think about this menace you spoke of, or how we could prepare to meet it.
Prepare to die, she could have said, honestly enough. With one cranky old escort, underpowered and lightly armed, with no bulk transport to get its population away to someplace safe, Xavier would be no more a match for a serious invasion than the raider had been for Sweet Delight. But for all their bright, perky music, their colorful, impractical uniforms, their screeching mast pipes, yes, and even the number of horse enthusiasts, Harris liked these people.
While we're here, I will be glad to give you what advice I can. But whether it does any good, that I can't know.
Of course not. And we will show our gratitude by taking your first advice to send word to the regular arm of Fleet. Sorry, I mean to Fleet Sector HQ.
I'll get back up to my ship and see what we've got in our records. Lady Cecilia brought her things down. She plans to visit various breeders here. So if you can tell me about the next shuttle...
You won't stay the night?
No. To be honest, I'll be more comfortable up there in direct contact with our scan techs.
Quite so. Then if it's agreeable, we'll plan to confer with you on the station in the next few days. And there'll be a shuttle ready. When, Captain Vasilos?
3 hours. It's fueling now.
Thank you.
Harris started to stand up and winced.
Oh, yeah. Lady Cecilia's right. I really should practice more on her simulator.
Never mind. It's not your equestrian expertise we need now.
All the better, since I don't have any.
Back aboard Sweet Delight, she called up the data they had gathered and came up with the answers. Or answers that made sense. The Xavierans considered themselves remote, far from any population or power center. They were remote from the center of any political entity, but not so remote from frontiers. After all, she had had to file a letter of intent with the RSS to visit Xavier, because it was in a frontier zone.
Location, location, location.
The Familia's regnant had grown by accretion, expanding along trade routes through unclaimed space until it bumped into resistance. The neat spheres of influence predicted by earlier planners existed only for small political units. Larger entities looked more like multidimensional models of complex organic molecules. Although this meant a larger surface to protect, for the volume included, the advantage of an outlying lobe that included vital jump points more than compensated for the extra defensive exposure. Castle Rock, with its massive stations Rockhouse Major and Minor, lay more or less at the center of Familius Regnant space, at least in 3 major axes. But those axes were not equal. The longest dimension was 5 or 6 times the shortest, including 2 fat tentacles or pseudopods extending toward compassionate hand territory. The interface between the Familius and its neighbors resembled that of an enzyme and its protein companion. Star by star, the competing entities had fit themselves together in a way that increased the defensive difficulties by making the contact surface vast. Most of the time, this surface was merely a potential one. In spaces far too large to garrison, contact existed only sporadically, and along the usual mapped routes of travel. Harris knew from experience that the ability to visualize the spatial interactions required both innate talent and practice. The visual representation she took to the next meeting with the General Secretary and his staff was far simpler than the one she and Petrus and Kutsudis would use. Even so, the General Secretary had trouble with it.
What's this skinny little thing out here?
Us.
Harris grinned at his shocked expression.
I know. You thought we were closer to the interior because Xavier is a short jump from Byerly and Newgarten and Shiva. But they're all strung out along one jump route, with an even smaller twig for Neverfall. There's Rockhouse, and there's Rotterdam.
Rotterdam, on its own slender twig, 3 jump points from Xavier because of the need to go around the saddle-shaped compassionate hand intrusion. As the General Secretary stared at the color-coded visual, Harris added the icons that were Kutsudis' best guess for the locations of fleet and compassionate hand warships. The Compassionate Hand maintained major bases in the saddle between the lobes where Xavier and Rotterdam lay. Logical. So did the RSS. When this survey had been taken, they had had 2 battle groups at Partis and 1 at Vashnagel. Harris explained what that meant, trying to keep it simple.
The Compassionate Hand intends its battle groups to be more than just space fighters. Each battle group deploys units capable of invading and occupying fixed positions, such as space stations and satellite defense systems. On a sparsely settled planet without good defenses, such teams could even take control of the entire world. More commonly, they would scorch the population from space, blow the population centers, perhaps with tactical nukes. Then they'd land their own construction teams and equipment.
They'd just kill everyone for no reason?
From their point of view, there's a reason. They don't care about people they don't need, and if they've chosen Xavier for a forward base, they don't want to waste time converting your population.
And they might choose us because...
Because of the jump point access Xavier provides. Although the direct route is straightforward, there are more alternatives from here than Rotterdam. It's still tricky. Look, the point of coming through here is surprise. So if they lose surprise here, they've expended effort for no gain. That means they'll try to interrupt communications as soon as, even before, they attack. Do you have daily Ansible traffic?
No. In fact, the charges are high enough that we usually store and batch it once a week at most.
So no one outside would notice if you didn't send a batch for a week or so.
That's right. Oh, I see. Then I suppose they could fabricate a message.
If they needed to. My point being, Xavier is most valuable in the early stages of a war. Then its value drops until they can get their defenses up, when it becomes valuable again simply because it denies those jump points to Fleet.
And our plan?
Tell Fleet what we think, and keep telling them until they listen. And don't let ourselves be surprised by an invasion force we weren't expecting. And hope that the enemy has not already intercepted their messages.
Rafa wandered around the street market on the planet Music, but caught no sight of the king, or clone, or whoever that had been. She couldn't see far anyway, past the colorful awnings and dwarf flowering trees, the little clusters of booths strung with banners. Finally, when her stomach informed her it was lunchtime, she followed her nose to a booth where a deft-fingered man wrapped spirals of meat and bread dough on sticks and grilled them. Next to that booth, another sold fruit punches. Rafa picked something called omberry, which she had never had before. She chose a bench under one of the non-flowering trees. She had noticed the bees humming among flowers, and worked her way down the meat and bread spirals. Her omberry punch had tartness enough to be refreshing on this warm day, without puckering her mouth. When she was through, she sat a few minutes with her legs stretched, watching the crowds of noontime shoppers. She had seen several booths she'd like to visit. Shell jewelry, ribbon weaving worked into striking belts and vests, along with displays of native crafts that didn't interest her. Even some pottery as ghastly as that made by Otala Moraline's crazy aunt. Now that she'd lost track of the king, and had no idea where Ronnie and George were, she might as well spend the afternoon shopping. With that cheering thought, she worked her way through the booths, back to the one with the shell jewelry.